Hello, and welcome to Backflips and Nerds, the baseball podcast with a British twist. We don't have any special guests today, so expect us on our worst behaviour and some big old swear words from yours truly, your ever genial host, John McGee. Before we start, usual housekeeping applies. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at @Batflips_nerds, on Facebook at facebook.com/Batflips and Nerds, and on our website, batflipsandnerds.com. Yet again, our new writers have done us a great service this week. We've got some brilliant pieces on there. Want to make a particular shout out for Rob Novara's excellent piece introducing the MLB draft to people who don't know all about it, and just sort of putting a light on how stupid and bizarre it is when you don't know baseball. So go and have a look at that. It's had really good uptake and we're really pleased with it. So this week we're missing both Ben and Tom. In fact, we haven't heard from Benny Big Bollocks since he signed on with the MLB dollar. And I can only assume that he's not coming back. We'll tell you as and when we know more. Tom's on a week-long training course, which is leaving him, and I quote, tired and emotional. I don't know about you, but I'm picturing some pretty heavy Bravo 2-0 shit. So keep him in your thoughts. Happily, I am joined by our evergreen stats hotshot, Darius Austin. How are you, Darius?
I'm doing very well, John. I was thinking about introducing myself as Robbie Ray's agent after your weekend discussion with Josh, led to some revelations, but I'm not sure anybody would buy it.
Well, maybe two-thirds of the way through was Josh dropped that in. So maybe if you'd waited and just dropped that bombshell, we'd have ridden with it.
Just casually slipped it in. Yeah, maybe I'll think of somebody else and slip it in later.
Well, you've already sort of taken your clothing off there, mate. So we're not going to believe it. And I say we because we are we. Happily, we are joined by, a guest, maybe a future regular contributor. We'll let you make up your minds as and when you've heard what he's got to say. Making his debut on the podcast is our relatively new, he's been doing it for a month, fantasy baseball guru and huge Nats fan, Blake Finney. How are you, Blake?
I'm doing all right. Still trying to pretend baseball games last 7 innings after yesterday.
Yeah, I think Max Scherzer is as well.
Didn't want to turn it over to the bullpen.
Well, who would? We're going to talk about that bullpen. I know Dusty Baker certainly wouldn't have wanted to.
Mm.
Before we get going, I just wanted to ask you quickly about how you ended up as a Nats fan. There aren't many of you here over in the UK.
Yeah, it's a bit of a bizarre story, really. When I went over to America back in 2003, we went to go see the Montreal Expos then. And at this point, I was still very young, so I was like, I don't really like baseball. But eventually, when I got back into it, kind of 2007, 2008, I had to come pick a team. I didn't want to join my dad supporting the Cubs. That seemed like a very bad idea at that point in time. So I thought, well, who's the other team I've been to see at home? So found out the Expos were the Nationals, and the rest is history, I guess.
Well, yeah, at least you stuck to your roots. Is that a decision that you're rueing in light of celebrations that your dad's had over the last couple of years?
Well, you say that. When I started following them, the Nats were on their way to 2 100 loss seasons. So that would have been the time to regret it.
Yeah, it's only got better since then, and fingers crossed, we'll continue to do so. We'll talk a bit about the Nats in due course, but actually, we are going to talk a little bit at the start of today's podcast about the team that just slipped through your fingers, because it's been a newsy week all round, but it's been a particularly newsy week with relation to everybody's favourite former face team turned heel team. There you go. That's everyone's obligatory weekly wrestling reference. Surely there'll be more than one this week. The Chicago Cubs, who've had a bit of a funny old week. Right now, as in almost hot off the press, but not quite. I mean, Darius literally told me this before we started recording. Came the news that Kyle Schwarber, the left fielder, catcher, third baseman / first baseman / man who can't play in any position and was a phenom during the playoffs last year, has been demoted to AAA. And what was your take on that, Darius?
Well, I mean, it is surprising because, you know, if he was kind of such a high-profile guy, and he's had these massive spots coming up big for the Cubs in the postseason. And even though he had relatively little major league experience, I think everyone thought he was going to be a star in pretty short order. And instead, he's hitting 171. and they sort of had this lead-off experiment going with him, and that didn't work, and now they've slotted Anthony Rizzo in there, and that seems to be a lot better. And so I think if it was any other player, you know, we probably wouldn't be all that surprised. But just because of the name and who he is, it kind of does still come as a shock, even though on the face of the performance, if you strip the name away, then it shouldn't really be that surprising. So sure. Sorry, go ahead.
As you said, sure, yeah, carry on.
Well, it's just I wonder what they're going to do with him. I don't know if they've really said if there's something specific that he's working on. I think they've given the standard clear his head excuse so far. I don't know how much it's going to help Schwarber to be demoted to AAA and whether it's going to ding his confidence and not really help him, or whether maybe he'll work on a couple of things and come back stronger. But yeah, it's certainly a shock to me, I think, because they seem to be pretty willing to stick with him no matter how badly he was hitting. So for him to be sent down, I think is a surprise, despite the fact that, yeah, as I say, we probably should expect it based on the performance.
Yeah, and he's great friends and college colleagues with the Boston Red Sox first baseman Sam Travis, who coincidentally is up in the bigs for pretty much his first prolonged stint. So interesting to see their paths taking a winding road after Travis being injured for most of last year too. I was just going to ask a question about Schwarber, particularly given the fact he's been a bit rough, and there's often been conversations about his deficiencies in the field. Do you think he could be a trade candidate, Blake? Do you think that that the Cubs could dangle him out there to get the starting pitching that they need?
I don't think Schwarber as much. I think they have enough faith in him to rebound after a little time down. And I guess they can afford to give him time, given their plethora of options in the outfield. So they've got Ian Happ, who's he's not hitting for great average at the moment, but he's hitting out of the park a lot. They can put Bryant in left, Zobrist in left. And they've got defensive specialist Haywood in right. So,
Darius, you sounded like you maybe had a different view. Do you think they could pull the trigger, maybe for a Johnny Cueto or something?
Well, I'm not sure how much they'd want to do that. I mean, Cueto can opt out at the end of the season, and Schwarber's obviously under team control for a really long time. I think they'd need to get more for that. It depends all on the perception, really. I know the Cubs believe in him a lot, and I don't think they'd want to let him go for a rental like Cueto. But it is an issue. He would be much better suited to a team with a DH. He's 22 now, and he's not a defensive asset. That's not going to get better with time, I don't think. If they could get a team in the AL with maybe some pitching help, who would be interested in Schwarber and perhaps would look past the start and buy him at the kind of value that he had over the offseason, then I wouldn't be completely surprised. But based on the noises they've made out of him over the last couple of years, it would kind of still be a little bit shocking to see him get moved. But I think the Cubs front office is probably smart enough that if they get a deal for a pitcher, they can also control for a few years and kind of get that defensive liability off their books and trade on Schwarber's perceived value, then I could see it happening, yeah.
Yeah, maybe Cueto wasn't the name that I should have thrown out there. Perhaps I should have been using Sonny Gray or Jose Quintana. They perhaps would be the ones, but although I couldn't see Quintana moving from the south side, that would be a bit of a shocker. Anyway, more Cubs. We're going to alight in my favourite place, which is Joe Maddon's back garden, where I like to stand. just inside the picket fence, pointing my finger and yelling because he's been up to his old tricks, which for those of you who are new to the podcast means he's being a fucking idiot again this week. If you missed it, if you've been burying your head in the sand, he claimed to, quote, have loved Anthony Rizzo sliding knees first into the San Diego Padres catcher Austin Hedges, who was subsequently injured. And then the following day, after the Padres manager, Andy Green, took the moral high ground, said, we're not going to throw a baseball at him. That's not the type of guy I am. Rizzo, a leadoff home run. Well, of course he did, because Anthony Rizzo is a brilliant baseball player. But I wanted to just sort of dwell on Joe Maddon. And Blake, you're new around here. You may have a different take on Joe Maddon, but what was your take on his comments this week with relation to Rizzo's slide to Hedges?
I think he's just backing up his guy, basically. He's it's the kind of thing managers do. Like when their pitcher hits one of the other team's batters to retaliate, the manager takes his side and goes, well, if he wants to do that, let him. He doesn't kind of admit to it, doesn't condone it, but he'll take his side. And I think he is kind of being a bit blind, because in the current state of the rules, it is a bad slide. Maybe 2-3 years ago, before the horrific Buster Posey injury, it would have been exactly what he wanted to see from his players.
Yeah, and what about you, Darius? Of course, Buster Posey is your first, your last, and your everything. So you've had a personal experience of this sort of horror show of a slide, although admittedly Rizzo's slide wasn't as bad as that one. What was your take? Do you think we can now fully call Madden the villain that I've always known he is?
I think we're getting there. Yeah, you brought up the heel turn earlier. The Cubs are definitely well on their way. I think they've won the World Series. Now they're sort of committing villainous acts on the field. I think we're well on the path to them sort of becoming fully dark side. But I think Blake's right about Madden backing up his player. This is the kind of thing that managers do all the time. It's incredibly unlikely that he would come out and say that Rizzo was wrong and he would should have done it, you know, tried to slide properly because there was a clear lane, which obviously we could all see. But I don't think it's surprising to see Madden back up his player, and he probably would have got a lot more flack from the team if he'd come out and sort of said something different. But yeah, I do think it's probably not helping the understanding. Rizzo didn't seem to be aware that he'd done anything wrong. He seemed to be saying that the umpires had told him that as long as the catcher had the ball, he was allowed to do that, which is not what the rule says, and I'm sure it's not what the umpires told him. And I don't think Madden backing him up is really helping with anybody's perception of how things should be done, or poor Austin Hedges, who basically got run over for no reason when he left a perfectly adequate lane. So, we talk all the time about wishing these kind of baseball traditions would go away that involve players getting hurt. And to Andy Green's credit, he came out and said the kind of thing that we usually say, which is not what we normally say about the managers, but he had some actually very level-headed comments about retaliation and saying how stupid it was for the idea of just putting on somebody on base for free because you're a little bit annoyed at the other team. So, all credit to Andy Green. He said something sensible, and if only Joe Madden could be more like him.
Yeah. If only Joe Madden could be more like any salient normal human being, as opposed to the cartoon character that he chooses to be, we'd all be happier and better off. Moving on.
Yeah, I think Andy Green's come out of this really well. Like, his player's been injured, and he's taken it in a nice, calm manner. It wasn't necessarily a cheap shot at the Cubs, but he kind of calmly dealt with it, let his feelings known, and moved on. Didn't need to retaliate, as Darius said.
Yeah, absolutely. This has been a week where that wasn't the high watermark of bullshit. We're going to continue wading ever, ever deeper. Next up, it's the next episode of the ongoing psychodrama that is Yasiel Puig versus the world. Whose side are you on? Of course, as listeners to this podcast, you're all on the side of the great man himself, old Yasiel, out there having a lot of fun and seemingly take a lot of flack for it. The latest episode came yesterday, that's Wednesday, when Puig hit a 3-run homer off the New York Mets to make the game 5-1 in a game that was eventually won 8-2 by his own Dodgers. He was then confronted after being very excited about hitting a home run, because of course he was, he's Yasiel Puig, that's what he does every time he hits a home run, by his countryman, Yoenis Cespedes, himself, something of a showman, and perhaps in this instance a hypocrite, and also by Wilmer Flores, and he was quoted after the game, don't do this, not when we're in a hole like this. As if there's any wrong time to be having a fun on a baseball field. Anybody else have any thoughts on Puig particularly? It appears not. Well, I've said it all.
I think it's a bit rich coming from Cespedes. He's one who likes to put on a bit of a show if he hits a 450-foot home run. So maybe not exactly the type of person you'd think would come over and say that. But again, it's coming back to the, are they trying to get rid of all the fun from the league? Mm. And if your pitcher gives up a big home run, so what? Pitch better.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a good check mark in your box, by the way. You're saying all the right things. We'll see. We'll continue to test you, Darius. I won't come to your opinion because we're gonna move on to the next level bullshit. And I know you've got some pretty strong opinions. Now, the last tour into this river of mess comes from again yesterday, Wednesday, and it was Jarrod Dyson, who bunted in the sixth inning of a game against the Detroit Tigers against the pitcher Justin Verlander, who just happened to be in the midst of a perfect game. And a lot of people weren't particularly happy about that, seeing it broke some unwritten rules of baseball and some other such nonsense. And I think you had a pretty strong opinion about that, didn't you?
Yeah, I think it's so ludicrous, the idea. The bunt is a valid baseball strategy. It's not illegal. There are no rules saying that you're not allowed to bunt. And Jarrod Dyson is a player whose leading tool is his speed. So it makes a lot of sense for him to bunt, especially against a good pitcher like Verlander, who, you know, Dyson knows, and I think he said this after the game, that his at-bats don't usually end all that well against Verlander. So why would he, in the sixth inning when they're getting no hit, decide to just go and swing away and strike out or get a, you know, weak ground ball or something? So, yeah, he went up there bunting, which he's quite good at, and he's quite fast, and he got on base. And that's a legitimate baseball strategy, and I think... the idea that you should not be allowed to bunt during a no-hitter is somehow saying, like, why would you make it easier for somebody? You know, that kind of, if anything, detracts from the experience for me. Like, I would feel like it was less of an achievement if somebody wasn't allowed to use one of their best strategies in order to try and get on base against me. And it's not like it's a free hit. You know, it's still difficult. If it was that easy to get on base with a bunt, then everybody would do it all the time. So to Verlander's credit, he said, you know, that that's part of the game, and Dyson is a good bunter, and he didn't seem that bothered by it. But I know a lot of other people had a very strong, this isn't what you do, this is against the unwritten rules violation. And I just think, if it's in the rules of the game, why do we need to have an unwritten rule? Dyson can bunt normally. If it was a one-hitter, he'd have been allowed to bunt. Yeah, I think it just detracts from the achievement if you lay down these arbitrary distinctions of what people are and aren't allowed to do when they're throwing a no-hitter. Because, yeah, why would that change suddenly? Why would you not be allowed to maximise your team's chances of winning the game?
Yeah, I totally agree, as does the brilliant Dane Perry, whose column on CBS Sports is, as usual, worth a read, but particularly so on this topic. We'll put it in the show notes for you. A couple of points that Dane makes in his article that I think are really interesting contextually about this particular bunt, that the Mariners at the time had a 6.8% chance of winning the game, and a few people used that against Dyson and said that he shouldn't be playing funny buggers in such a situation. But he goes on to sort of nix that point by saying, well, you know, they still did have a chance of winning, and of course did go on to win the game 8-5 after a 3-run inning in which Dyson was the first person to get on base. So this is the absolute height of bollocks this week, and we're going to move away from bollocks and onto, well, I'm afraid we're not going to move on from bollocks, because we're going to talk about Pablo Sandoval, who has been DL'd as of yesterday with flu. And actually, when I was writing my show notes, a bit of wishful thinking entered my mind, and I actually wrote that he'd been DFA'd. He wasn't DFA'd, everybody. I'm sorry. So my question to you both is, given that Sandoval has been DL'd with flu this week, what's the next excuse for him to be nowhere near an MLB baseball field? What do you reckon, Blake?
Well, after his winter diets, he'll come back too slim to play next time.
What, because of the flu?
He'll lose all the weight from the flu. I was looking this up beforehand, and I didn't realise he was quite so bad. I think I remember him. Didn't he get off to an okay start as well?
He hit up a couple of home runs, but wasn't getting on base an awful lot. So the usual thing that Darius will know was quite effective a while ago. What about you, Darius? You know Pablo Sandoval pretty well. What excuse is there possibly left to keep him away from baseball?
Well, I've just seen that they're now saying it's an ear infection, so that's already been moved on from the flu, apparently. I don't know if you could run out. I mean, maybe just get a medical dictionary or something and scroll through. I think, you know, there's probably a lot of things that are jumping to people's minds. Maybe we should have some kind of wrestling related injury. We could say he was grappling with somebody in the locker room and
sumo injury.
Yeah, sumo injury. He's got a massive pain in the ass. maybe that's what he is. The other question about Sandoval before we move on was, do you guys think he'll be gone from the Red Sox this year? Do you think they actually will DFA him? Do you think they'll bite the bullet on that 70 million or so that they still owe him?
I think they might do, because they've got Devers in AA now, who's, I think he had a bit of a cold spell a while ago, but he's back on track. So if they can get him to the Red Sox kind of early next year, I think they can afford to get rid of him. They've got the money to.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you reckon, Darius? Maybe we can trade him one up for Eduardo Nunez. Reunite the
I think we'll stick with Nunez. I know you're already carrying one player who you're paying a lot of money to sit in the minors in the AAA, Lynn Craig, Tom's favourite. So I don't know how willing the Red Sox are to do that twice and carry two guys. And it's not like Sandoval's coming off the books this year or even next year. So, yeah, as much money as they have, I don't know how willing they are to do that. But at this point, it's kind of hard to see what else they are going to do, because it doesn't seem to be getting any better. He's obviously not getting any younger. And yeah, as Blake says, they've got options in the minors who can come up and I'm sure play better than this. So it is becoming a bit of an issue. Yeah, do they just keep making up injuries for him now and hope they can get away with that?
Yeah, we could send him to what I like to term the Knobheads graveyard in Pawtucket, where we do, of course, have triple Alan Craig. Remember, guys, All-Star voting for the International League, the AAA All-Star game is still open. You can still vote for Alan Craig. Make sure you do it 25 times a day. We'll love you forever. But also, his name just popped into my head and I felt a cold shiver, Ruzne Castillo. And that's a name we won't mention ever again on this podcast, I promise. I
didn't realise he was still alive.
Yeah, he's still alive. Yeah, still the weirdest man in baseball. That's going some. Red Sox fans, I promise we will never, ever mention that man again. But we are going to talk about one more DFA, because there's been another high-profile one today, and that was Stephen Vogt, the Oakland Athletics catcher. Specifically, I wanted to respond to a question from Sam Walker on Twitter. Hello, Sam. Thanks for the question. He asked specifically about DFAs. He was asking whether this was a roster juggling exercise or a transfer listing exercise. I thought it was a good question, Darius. So I don't know about you. I think in this instance, it's possibly a transfer listing exercise, but it could be either, depending on the circumstances.
Yeah, I don't think the A's are in such a situation where they are struggling for roster space and this is just what they've come up with. I think it's the kind of thing. They have younger catchers they want to play, maybe, but I don't think it's been born out of total need and that they can't find anything else to do with Vogt. So I think it is more a case of, yeah, you know, we're going to put this guy through waivers and see if anyone claims him and then take it from there. But yeah, I think the A's aren't in a position. They're not a contending team. They haven't got a roster crunch. There aren't all these guys knocking on the door or coming off the DL, and they've got to find somewhere for Stephen Vogt to go. I think it is more of the latter case in this situation.
Yeah, I think you're right, but that's a good question, Sam. It can be either, but I think in this instance, it's the transfer listing analogy that's most appropriate, and I'm sure that Stephen Vogt will find another team who'll pick him up. Maybe the Padres, they're short of a catcher after this week. And Ryan Hannigan's honeymoon in Colorado can't continue because his eyes are going to fuse together any day soon. One last thing on the news side of things before we get into a couple of substantive topics, one of which was put to us by a listener who seems to have a crystal ball and knew what we were going to talk about. But before we come to that, So Keith Hernandez, who is part of the best baseball broadcast you could listen to, which is, of course, the New York Mets broadcast, I'm going in a bit of trouble this week for saying something off air, which was, if you haven't read it, very amusing. This was in a game against the Washington Nationals, so Blake may well have been listening to it live, I hope you were, in which Hernandez was caught off mic stating that Tanner Roark was, quote, getting his tits lit, which is a phrase that I will be using out of context for the rest of my life. I don't know about you two. So the question for you both is, which player will be getting his tits lit this weekend, Blake? Who do you reckon?
You sprung this on me on short notice. I was frantically looking through the fixtures this weekend. The one that immediately jumps out to me is King Felix against the Astros. Oh. He's just coming back from the DL. He's not been the same old King Felix of the golden years when he threw his perfect game. And I think everyone knows the Astros hit 1 through 9 now. They're just the unstoppable beast in terms of offense. So I think I'd go with King Felix.
Jake Marisnik lights King Felix's tits. That's a phrase you didn't think you were hearing this year in baseball. Darius, what do you reckon?
Sadly, I do think that's a good pick, which is a shame because Felix was a great pitcher in his prime, and the wheels have just come off now and he's been hurt. And yeah, it's very sad, and I'd love to see him get back to it. But I think Blake might be right on that one. I think I'm kind of tempted to go with an old classic and pick Ubaldo Jimenez, who's facing the Rays tomorrow night. Now, the Rays are a bit of a boom or bust strikeout or home run team, but Ubaldo's got a 6.25 ERA, which sounds about right, and I think the Rays have got the potential to absolutely light him up in a couple of innings and send him home quickly. So I know how much you like to talk about the Orioles, so yeah, I'll go with Ubaldo tomorrow night.
Good old Ubaldo, yeah. One of those two, I think, is a good pick. Them and whoever's pitching for the Cincinnati Reds, it literally doesn't matter who it is. That's a phrase that you could use to describe their pitching line. Right, so from one load of bad pitchers to another. So Blake, we've got you here. This is your debut, and one of the reasons why we've invited you along this evening was to talk about the Nationals, of course, your team. Specifically, you wrote an article for us last week about the Nationals bullpen, which has been historically appalling. So for those who haven't had the opportunity to read that article, or you haven't been following the Nationals closely, can you just give us a quick recap as to what's been going on there?
Well, in general, it's just been a catastrophe, really. You get late in the game with a 1 or 2 run lead, and you're at the point now where you're just expecting them to blow it. We've had, I would say, 1 or 2 reliable relievers. We've got Eddie Romero's turning it around lately, and Matt Albers, or Fat Albers, as he's more affectionately known now. Other than that, it's been a bit of a car crash, really.
But isn't this a car crash that you knew was coming? Because the Nats tried to sign Mike Melanson and Kenley Jansen in the offseason, and your bullpen was tripe last year as well, with the exception of Melanson, of course.
Yeah, it's an issue we've had for a few years now. So it goes way back when we lost the division to the Mets and we had Papelbon and Shudders at the back end of the bullpen. And yeah, since then it's just never really been resolved. I think the main issue this year is the lack of a true closer. We had Trinan come in at the start, looked promising for one appearance, and it all went downhill from there. We had Sean Kelly in, kind of, he's been getting knocked around, allowing a home run every other inning. And now we had Glover in, now injured for the second time this season, and someone who was a non-roster invitee to spring training in Matt Albers now closing games out, which is a scary thought, really.
Darius, it's not a scary thought for you, is it? It's a delightful thought, Matt Albers closing out games.
Yeah, well, I'm still conflicted about this. For people who don't know what we're talking about, Matt Albers was one of the two relievers who had the longest streak ever of games finished without a save. So essentially, he was getting used at the back end of games all the time without ever actually getting any saves. That obviously has been broken this season, which is kind of, I think I am disappointed, because the guy who's competing with Ryan Webb is now sort of sat alone at the top of the leaderboard, looking a bit sad and lonely. And so that's a bit of a shame. But I think the thing that really sort of made me feel bad for the Nationals in Blake's piece was when he mentioned Jansen, who I think now has 50 strikeouts and no walks on the season. And it's just been absolutely ludicrous. I was just thinking, if they'd have got him, how much better, already the season's going pretty well apart from the bullpen, how much better could it have been for them now? I shouldn't feel too bad for the Nationals because I support the Giants and we're miserable, so I'll stop feeling bad now. But the Nationals with Jansen would be a terrifying prospect, I think.
Yeah, I was going to ask about the Nationals, and Blake, forgive me for the way I'm going to phrase this. Are they actually any good, or are they just playing a lot of really bad teams?
It does feel like we're just coasting, because we've got the Phillies are tragic yet again. Somehow the Braves actually seem like a okay team, but they're still all under 500. And especially recently when we've been playing teams out of the division, we've not done ourselves much justice. So I remember we had a series against the A's and we kind of struggled through that. So it's something we can kind of work our way through because no one's really going to challenge us for the division. But so if we can get better in August and September, then maybe we can build on kind of the strong foundation we've got.
Yeah, and of course there's room to improve. What do you reckon then, Darius? Is the NL East the worst division in baseball? I mean, that's an easy question to answer, but how historically bad is this division, and what's going on with one or two of these teams that were supposed to be quite good? You know, the Phillies are supposed to be on the upward swing of their curve, and the Mets, of course, we've spoken about them a few times. They're supposed to have the super rotation that just seems to have disintegrated.
Yeah, I think a lot of people made the point about the Mets that pitching is more volatile, and there was some potential there. If those guys couldn't all hold up, then perhaps these things were going to fall apart quite quickly for them, and that is basically what's happened. And that their offense, Cespedes aside, has not been very good. The Phillies just all seem to have regressed at exactly the same point to me. They kind of look like a bunch of young, promising guys, and then players like Herrera just seem to have taken a step backwards instead. And even their top prospects, guys like JP Crawford, looks absolutely miserable in the minors right now. And it's kind of like something's happened to the whole organization at once to sort of turn them from these kind of preseason dark horses into absolutely the worst team in baseball right now. Which is, you know, basically saving the Giants from being the worst team in baseball, I think. So, yeah, I think things have fallen nicely for the Nationals, but I don't know what Blake thinks about the postseason chances. And I think there's no doubt that the Nationals are winning this division, but when they get into the postseason and the Dodgers are there, and probably at least one, if not both, of the the Rockies or the Diamondbacks will be in the wild card game, so one of them will be in, and I think I probably still expect the Cubs to be there as well. How do you think they're going to get on against those guys, Blake?
I think the scary thing at the moment could be facing one of the Dodgers, Diamondbacks or Rockies in the NLDS, because at the moment the NL West looks pretty damn good. So we'd probably have to kind of hope for the best and play whoever comes out of the NL Central. No one really wants to win at the moment. It's just kind of the Brewers and Cubs going, do you want to win it? No.
yeah, it looks like that. I just sort of had a flash through my head there. What would you make, Darius, of a one and done wild card game between Robbie Ray and John Gray? Who would you go for?
I think I've got to go with my boy Robbie Ray there. Although I'd love to see a wild card game in either of those parks. I think it could be quite entertaining.
Two teams in either of those parks, both hitter-friendly parks, yeah. Could be about 22-20.
Yeah, so it could turn out badly for both of them. But I think, I mean, Gray's been hurt a lot of the year, and Ray seems to have taken a step forward. So I would put my money on the Diamondbacks in that situation.
Yeah, you could see him piggybacking on Zach Greinke. Anyway, we've sort of tracked across the country as we tend to do when we talk about the NL East, because you just don't know where to start. So, Blake, what do you reckon? We're going to talk a bit about where people stand at the trade deadline in a moment. And it's unquestionable that the Washington Nationals are going to be buyers, and they're definitely going to be looking at bullpen pieces. But are they going to be looking at anything else? Is there anything else that they need in order to, you know, push them on for the postseason?
I think other than that, the fifth starter role has been a bit of a revolving door at the moment. So we've had Joe Ross coming in, trying to recapture his form of the last couple of seasons. We had Jacob Turner come in, did okay, but not great. So there could be a kind of getting a fifth starter in, but I think obviously Rizzo's main focus is going to be on the bullpen and fixing that. From the noise he makes, it looks like he's going to try and go all out for a closer, because he thinks getting that will then kind of let the rest of the bullpen fall into place and get everyone in roles they're comfortable in.
Yeah, I think that's going to be the case. So the last question was, we sort of dwell on the NL East for a final moment, and this is from a young man called Tom Pringle in Oxfordshire. He's sent a rather silly question. Do the New York Mets need Bartolo back, Darius? What do you reckon?
I think obviously things have just gone horribly wrong for the Mets since Bartolo left. There's a direct correlation between him not being on the team and the Mets just going to total shit, really. So I think, there's no denying it. I think they've got to do everything they can to get Bartolo back on the team, and I'm sure they'll go on a huge second half run as soon as they get him, and they'll do another sort of, I think they were below 500 at this point last year, so I can see the same thing happening. Bartolo leads them to the playoffs and a triumphant World Series appearance.
Yeah. Note for Sandy Alderson, this is the type of voodoo magic that will happen to your team when you replace your cult hero position with from Bartolo Colon to Tim Tebow. This is what happens to you. This is the thing that you've invited on. Go and bury some shorts in some cement somewhere or something. It'll make it all better again. Right, so we're talking about the trade deadline already. It's not for 6 weeks, but people love speculation in this game, and it's starting to get interesting. Divisions are starting to separate, and we're starting to have a view about who's going to be buying and who's going to be selling. Some of these teams are obvious every year. The Dodgers are always going to be buyers. The Red Sox are always going to be buyers. One or two others, the Cubs, of course, will probably end up being buyers. But I think this year, as far as I can remember, is the most interesting in a while for having a number of teams who you might not expect on that bubble or peeping over the top, who you might not have expected to be buyers, who find themselves in a bit of a strange position with a question mark about what they're going to do about where they are on their competition curve. So we're going to talk about a handful of those teams. We'll see. I've got quite a long list, but we'll see how many we can get through. And we'll go alternately to both of you. I mean, I want to get both of your opinions on each of these, but I'll start with one of you and bring the other one in afterwards on each, if that makes sense. So we're sort of like a snake draft, right? Guys, you're fantasy baseball guys. You know all about snake drafting. So we're going to start with a team who are in the NL East, who we didn't talk about, and I purposely didn't dwell on them. That's the Miami Marlins. Now, the Marlins are bad. That's unquestionable. They have a 32-38 record. They're in third place. The chance of them making the playoffs is pretty much next to zero. But the Marlins are a weird team. They have a really strange ownership setup. They're in the process of being sold. They have some really, really good players on very, very long contracts. Marcel Ozuna, for example, Giancarlo Stanton, which might be quite difficult to move. So the question about the Marlins is not, will they sell? Or maybe it is. Firstly, will they sell? And secondly, how much will they sell? And what will they sell, Darius? What do you reckon?
I think, guys like Ozuna, yeah, he's on a team-friendly deal, and I don't think they should sell someone like him. Stanton's deal is massive, so it's hard to see him getting shifted, really, and he's got an opt-out anyway, so I'm not sure where they stand. The thing with the Marlins is we've seen them so many times before, you think, oh, the Marlins look really good, and then they turn around and blow everything up. So I'm going to go out on a limb and just say that the Marlins do absolutely nothing. Can I do that? Am I allowed to do that?
Of course you are. And I wouldn't be surprised if they do that either. I don't think it's what they should do, but I wouldn't be surprised if it is what they do. What do you reckon, Blake?
I think I'm going to join Darius on the fence there and say they're not going to do a lot. They was it last year where they decided to make a deal for Andrew Cashner when they were nowhere near any sort of contention? So I think they've got some good pieces there. Like we say, Stanton, Ozuna, they've got Yelich, D. Gordon. So they've got the makings of a good team if they can keep it together and try and figure something out over the next couple of years.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I mean, if I were in their front office, I'd be reflipping Dan Straley, who appears to be on the flukiest streak of any pitcher in the history of baseball. I'd be getting rid of the interesting bullpen pieces that they've got down there, Brad Ziegler and a number of others, and trying to build things around Ozuna for the future. If they can move Stanton on, they're going to get an absolutely enormous haul regardless of his contract, because he remains one of the superstars of the game, you know. There's plenty for them to do to look like an interesting team over the next 5 years, but they're the Miami Marlins, and let's be honest, they are not gonna do it. One team who are probably not going to be an interesting team for the next few years, but might be for the next 6 months, depending on which way they flop, is the Kansas City Royals, who are 35-36. They're in third place. They could make the playoffs. They're not too far out of a shout for the wild card race. They're on a very, very good run at the moment, and let's not talk about what happened on Wednesday night, because we might be here all evening and we haven't got time for that. They do, however, have a lot of short contracts. So some of their bigger names, Mike Moustaka, Sarah Cosma, Kelvin Herrera and Lorenzo Cain, are all out of contract at the end of this season. So, Blake, what do you reckon the Royals are going to do? Are they going to buy? Are they going to stand pat? Or are they going to try and shed one or two of these contracts to try and restock the farm?
I think, unless they really climb into the race where there's no doubt that they're in it, I think they need to sell. We kind of saw it a little bit with the Pirates last year when they were kind of half in contention. They still dealt Melanson and got Felipe Rivera, who's been an absolute barnstormer for them this year. So I think for a low-budget team, you need to kind of sell now while their value is still high rather than get nothing for them in the off-season, and then you could probably quickly turn it back around again and get back into contention in a few years.
Yeah, what do you reckon, Darius? Buyers or sellers?
I think Blake's absolutely right that they should sell. I just have this sort of niggling sensation at the back of my mind that they kind of want to do one more glory run, and they're close enough to the wild card that they might just make a couple of ill-advised moves and not sell all the guys that they ought to be selling right now, just in sort of the vain hope that they can go on one last playoff run before this core gets blown up at the end of the year. So I'm going to say that they make some moves that, yeah, would maybe point towards buy, even though they should be selling all of these guys.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. How about this one? A confounding one to be sitting on the bubble. The St. Louis Cardinals, 34-36 in third place behind the Chicago Cubs and the magic soar away Milwaukee Brewers. Funny phrase to be saying in the context of baseball. Voodoo magic gone, has it, Darius? Are they going to sell this year?
Yeah, it seems to have worn off, doesn't it? Although I don't know whether we're seeing the magic manifest itself in the sense that nobody's actually gone anywhere with the division. The Cubs probably ought to be 10 or 15 games away by now, and they aren't. So it still may be rubbing off on some other teams, but the Cards certainly haven't played as well as we've seen them in recent years. I think they will be sellers. I think they're a reasonably smart front office, and we've certainly seen them be able to turn the team around in fairly short order before. So I wouldn't be surprised if they make a couple of well-advised moves this summer, and maybe next season we're kind of already thinking about them playing their way back into wildcard contention. So yeah, I'm going to go with sellers.
Who do you think are they going to move then?
I don't know. No one specific has leapt to mind. I need to have
Rosenthal.
Yeah, he's certainly a candidate. I think I think he must be reasonably close to the end of his time there. It feels like he's been there a few years now. And there's always teams looking for bullpen arms, as Blake certainly knows.
So, what do you reckon then, Blake? Is Rosenthal on the national shopping list?
He could be. I'm not sure what his contract situation is at the moment, but if it's favourable, I don't see why not. I think one of the main players they may look to move could be Colton Wong. They've had a bit of a falling out with him, and I know he's keen to get away because they've not been giving him regular playing time at the moment. Maybe someone like Jed Jerko as well could be moved. Just these teams looking for nice utility pieces who they can rotate in and out of their lineups the rest of the season.
Yeah, so seems to be consensus on the Cardinals. Maybe a maybe regretful sellers, by the sounds of it. It'd be interesting to see how they go. They might be one of these teams that do a bit of both, who I think are always the most interesting around trade deadline time. A couple more teams, I think, who maybe will fall into that boat, both of which, the next three teams are going to come from the AL East. I think we can pretty much take it to the bank that the Red Sox and the Yankees are going to be buyers at the trade deadline. But what do you reckon about the Orioles, Blake? Are they eventually going to get to the point where they're actually going to trade some players away, or are they going to double down and carry on with their weird, slightly above 500 approach to baseball?
It's been kind of their trademark thing, kind of lurk around 500, sneak into the wild card game. So I think again, they make kind of a sneaky move, get up in the third in the division and sneak into the wild card with another couple additions. So they've never gone out and made the huge, massive, like blockbuster move. So maybe adding kind of the little players from other teams that have fallen out of contention.
Yeah, it could be an interesting one. I have a view that they should just blow it up. They're just annoying the bloody hell out of me, and that's why they should do it. Just stop it. Just get lost. Just stop doing this with the Buck Showalter potions. You know, just let
the team you always, the team you always predict to finish bottom of the league, and then out of nowhere they're like, no, we're still here. We're still contending.
They're still there, but they are actually last. What do you think, Darius? I kind of feel like the bottom might have fallen out. I would be trading Machado now, personally, but, you know, that's me.
Yeah, would you be keen to see Machado on the Red Sox there, John?
I would, personally. Very much so. even despite the shenanigans that went on earlier this season, because, you know, when you've got a giant sinkhole, and I use the word giant advisedly at third base, or Devin Marrero, who, handsome as he is, and I found that one weird. He even goes, Devin Marrero just went on the field because he's so handsome and he's got a really great glove. Have you seen this guy try to bat? You might as well have me out there. Yeah, I'd take him. I'd take Machado. I think most of the league would.
I think the Orioles should sell because I don't think they're very good. I think the problem they have is that there aren't an awful lot of guys on this roster who you look at and think, wow, this is a great trade chip. I mean, yes, you've got Machado, and if they want to sell him a year early, I think they could get an absolute ton for him. So maybe now is the time to do it. And I guess somebody like Seth Smith, maybe if someone wants a platoon bat, and obviously they'd get a lot less for him. But I mean, they've got three guys in their rotation. In Ubaldo, we mentioned earlier, and Tillman and Miley, I think, who are all set to be free agents. None of them have been very good. Miley's kind of lucked his way into some decent results, but the others have not. And yeah, it's just hard to see how they're going to get an awful lot out of what they've got here, because they've either got guys who are under a lot of team control, certainly their bullpen is all kind of guys who they've got for several more years, or guys who just haven't been very good, I think. And so it's kind of hard to see where they go from here.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. They're a funny one. And staying in the AL East, what about the team who have the same record as the Orioles? That's the team that we don't mention on this podcast, who are 35 and 36 and play in Canada. What do you reckon about them?
are they like Voldemort now? Are we not allowed to say the name at all?
You're allowed to say it. I just won't be dealing it with my voice.
Well, the Blue Jays, yeah, I think they've played their way back into it. I'm a lot more confident about their roster than I am the Orioles. I think they've got a lot more threats in that lineup, and I think they've got more promise in the rotation. So I think they'll maybe look to add a piece or two, certainly while they've still got Josh Donaldson on the team, and maybe they can eke another year out of Bautista, who's heated up lately. So I think they're kind of in that window where they want to make the most of what they've got in their core now before these guys get too old or their contracts end. So I can see the Jays making a move or two to upgrade.
Do you agree, Blake?
Yeah, I tend to side with Darius on that. They, after their abysmal start, they're coming back into it now. So if they can get a few bullpen arms, well, preferably not leave the bullpen arms for the Nationals, but... if they could get a few bullpen arms to tighten up the back end of that, then they could really step back into contention.
Yeah, so the team with the worst hashtag in baseball, well, the worst two hashtags in baseball, I'm not even going to say Let's Rise on this podcast, how I've said it, but arguably even worse, Asuna Matata. They'll be singing that probably for the rest of the season, unfortunately. Just as long as they don't usurp the Red Sox, I won't mind. Lastly in the AL East, a team who have been a bit of a surprise package this year, the Tampa Bay Rays, who are pretty good all over the field and have seen some steps forward from a number of their players. Are they going to go against tight, Blake, and actually trade away some prospects in order to maintain momentum?
I think they could. They're quite deep on the prospect ranks compared to some recent years. So they've got Willy Adames, I don't know if that's how you pronounce it, and Jose De Leon, who could perk the interest of other teams. So obviously they've got to get the right contract because they're the Tampa Bay Rays and they beg on the streets for extra money. But I could see something. They've got Wilson Ramos coming back, who I'm really high on from his Nationals days. And that'll get rid of the abortion that is Derek Norris behind the plate.
Yeah, a favourite of this podcast is old Degsy. Got a great beard, but not a great bat. Darius, what do you reckon? Tampa, are they going to make a splash?
I think probably a splash is maybe putting it on a bit strong. I think they might buy in such a manner that you almost wouldn't be sure that they'd bought anything. So I think they definitely think they can make the playoffs, and they're looking in a pretty good spot at the moment to at least get the wild card. But I would suspect the moves will be of the smaller variety. That they picked up Trevor Plouffe, who got DFA'd by the A's earlier this week. I think they'll be making moves of that kind of calibre rather than anything particularly huge that's going to be plastered all over the front pages of the sports websites.
Yeah, I agree. Now, one team that probably is going to be a big mover and shaker at the deadline, if past performance is anything to be a herald, is the Pittsburgh Pirates, who are currently 33-39 and in fourth place in their division. I say this, they're not actually too far behind the Cardinals, who we just talked about, who we did tab as sellers. But the point is that the Pirates are way below par in terms of what people expect of them year on year as a perennial playoff contender. They've got a number of players coming to the end of their contracts who are at the wrong end of the aging curve. One or two players who have got potentially high ceilings not performing particularly well. My question, therefore, Darius, isn't really, are the Pirates going to be sellers? Because I think they will be. It's how much are they going to sell?
Yeah, they've got a lot of guys who are still pretty young, especially they've got rotation options like Gerrit Cole and Jameson Taillon, who are under contract for a long time still. So I think there's a limit to how much they can cash in, really. McCutcheon is the big name, and there was a lot of talk about him going to the Nats. So I'm sure Blake can elaborate on that. But I think he's a guy who has a lot of value to their franchise beyond simply what he does on the field. So I still have some questions whether they could actually pull the trigger on a trade. But given that he's turned it on recently, I think they could get quite a lot for him from a team looking for outfield help. So I think if they do some selling, then he's going to be the one that they sell. But I'm not sure whether they'll be able to bring themselves to do it or not.
Right. So, Blake, I'm going to change it up slightly for you here. I've got four names on the list of players that I think, I personally think the Pirates should trade. Tell me whether you think that they will. So, first, one who might, again, be on your personal shopping list, Juan Nicasio.
I'm not exactly sure what his contract is, but I think he's got an ERA well under two. I think he's the kind of asset they want to keep for a little bit longer, kind of secure that back end of the bullpen with Rivera, who's under contract for a long time. So I think they might be able to hold on to him, especially with the glut of more proven bullpen arms that are readily available, like Robertson and Herrera.
David Freese.
That's a tough one. Maybe your own Boston Red Sox might like him at third base.
Yeah, well, certainly I would be happy to see him there. I'm a fan of his as a player and as a person. He's got 18 months left. I think that'd be a nice pickup for somebody. If I were the Pirates, that'd be an easy deal for me to make, provided the price was right. So Freese is a maybe. How about the aforementioned Andrew McCutcheon?
I think Darius hit the nail on the head, where if you took out kind of the intangibles from it, it would be a no-brainer to deal him. But because he means so much to the city of Pittsburgh, it will be a difficult sell. I think they will get someone who will see McCutcheon's revival this year and pay the King's ransom that he wasn't worth in the off-season. So I think he will move.
And the last one, and this is maybe I'll take both of your views on this. Are they going to trade Gerrit Cole, and should they trade Gerrit Cole?
I think not now. I think they should wait until the off-season and assess where their roster's at, because I think he's got left, if I'm not mistaken. So yeah. if they wait out this season, because especially after last season where he was bit by the injury bug a bit, let him keep proving himself this season and make sure you get maximum value for him.
What do you reckon, Darius? That sounds about right to me.
Yeah, I think this is probably one of the worst times that they could sell him. It hasn't gone particularly well for him this year. And I think he's still obviously worth a lot as a relatively young pitcher who's under a pretty cheap contract. But I think in terms of his performance on the field, his value is probably a little bit diminished right now, and that they have no reason to move him at this point in time. So I think if they were thinking about that, and I'm sure that they're probably not going to spring the kind of big contract that it would take to keep a guy like him on the free agent market, they're probably best off waiting and hoping that he turns it around, and then maybe thinking about that at some point next year if they're going to start thinking about it at all.
Great. So we've got two more teams left. One will come as no surprise, and one certainly is a surprise, and that's our pet team, the Milwaukee Brewers. They were 39-35 and in first place, and of course, home of the two best players in baseball, Eric 1 and Eric 2. The question is, can they beat the Cubs? Are they actually a win-now team? Do they need too much to push them over the edge, Darius? Now, when we spoke about this last, you said that a friend of yours who you do another podcast with was convinced that they were going to trade Eric Thames. Has that changed?
I think that they may even have kind of missed the spot there for that, because he has tailed off a bit. He's still, you know, his overall line looks good, but he's not been the Thames we saw over the first month of the season. So I don't know. I haven't asked him about that lately. I think their opportunity to sell him extremely high has gone, but he's still on a very friendly contract. I think from everything I've heard, David Stearns is very focused on this rebuild. I think he knows that it's not a good idea to kind of cash in his chips right now, because there's a lot of kind of still very raw aspects to this team. They've got a lot of extremely young guys who are still learning the majors. They still need pitching help. I think Jimmy Nelson has kind of turned it on lately, and Blake mentioned him in his free agents and the fantasy. I noticed he's looked really good, but outside of him there isn't an awful lot in this rotation. I just don't think they've got what it takes to certainly make a decent postseason run, even if they could somehow find their way into a divisional series. So as fun as they've been, and as much as I would like to see them do well, I think this is a bit too early for them, and I think the Cubs are going to overhaul them, and I think probably the Brewers will do the sensible thing and kind of just carry on with this rebuild and maybe look to be competing in a year or two.
Do you disagree with any of that, Blake?
Not particularly. I think I agree with him that I think the Cubs are going to haul them in eventually. It might be a case of conservative buy. If there's a player you can get for under a few years control who will help you with the rebuild down the road, then you can go out and make that move. But I don't think they're going to sell the farm for a rental for the rest of the season just to try and capitalise now, I don't think. Because they've still got some young players kind of at the top levels of the minors and in the majors now. I know one of my personal favourites is Lewis Brinson, who's not got off to the best of starts. So they need time to get them accustomed to the major league level.
Yeah, or Lewis Bronson, as he was called in an article that I read earlier on today. I can't remember exactly where that was, but if I find it, I'll make sure that I tweet it out. It certainly made me chuckle. Yeah, unfortunately, guys, I fear that that's going to be the case. And all I can say to that is a big old boo, because everyone wants to see the Brewers do better, particularly because they're so much fun to watch and they've got so many likeable players. But they're going to have all of those players for a long, long time. So one last team. And the question isn't really whether they're going to be buyers and sellers. It's are they going to be active at the trade deadline? And I'll ask you, Darius. Seattle Mariners, are they going to be active?
I think they will be active because Jerry DePoto loves to make trades. So there's some value of those trades, maybe next to nothing, because I don't think he makes the kind of big blockbuster trades. But I would be very surprised if the Mariners managed to get through the next 6 weeks without trading anybody, because, yeah, he seems like the GM who's on the phone the most trying to make deals.
So, Blake, what do you reckon? Over and under, over or under 5.5 trades by Jerry DePoto in the next 6 weeks?
I think he's been waiting for this moment for a while. He's been making all the big off-season moves, like signing Cano and whatnot. And now the Mariners are finally in somewhat contention. So he's probably got his finger on the trigger, ready to pull on all these trades.
So that's an over from you, I take it.
Yeah, that is.
Yeah. He's definitely going to be an active guy over the next 6 weeks. And of course, so are we. So that's about all we've got time for today. We'll be back next week. I won't be back next week because I'll be in Portugal. But there'll be some formulation of chaps here with you next week. And then, of course, on the 4th of July, it's going to be the MLB Battlegrounds event in Hyde Park. We hope to see some of you there. I'll be there. Darius is going to be there. Are you going to be there, Blake?
Unfortunately not. I'm saving up all my holiday to go to America, so I can't get to London in time.
Oh, well, we'll have a beer for you on your behalf. Hopefully,
as long as I'm not paying.
Yeah, well, yeah, I'll be paying because I'll be drinking it. Hopefully some of you who are listening will be there too. I know that some of you follow us on Twitter have mentioned that you're going to be there. Whether we have some sort of meetup or not, I haven't decided yet, but we should try and arrange something. It'd be nice to meet some of you in person. I know I've met some of you, but it'd be nice to meet even more of you. Excitingly, we are going to have some stickers, so we'll give you a sticker. If you come and find us, I'll have some stickers on my person, hot off the press, exclusive. Come and find one of those and make sure that you continue to help us build brand awareness. Now, as I said at the top, of course, usual parish notices before we end. Remember to follow us on Twitter at batflips_nerds, on Facebook, facebook.com/batflipsandnerds, and on our website, batflipsandnerds.com. If you are enjoying the podcast and you download on iTunes, make sure you get over there and give us a 5-star rating. Really helps get more listeners, helps push us up those charts and so on. If you haven't checked it out already, go over to Blog Talk Radio, who we're now part of their community. They've got a lot of really great baseball podcasts. Many of the SB Nation podcasts and the Baseball Perspectives podcasts are hosted there, so you'll be able to find some really cool stuff that you may not have picked up about your team or about baseball in general. Go over there and check that out. And before I let these two go, I'm going to ask them where you can find them on Tinternet. So, Blake, where can we find you?
You can find me at Finney Blake, FINNEY Blake.
Great. And Darius, where are you and what podcasts are you on this week?
You can find me at DariusA64. If you are a fantasy fan, I'm on the Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast, usually at least once, sometimes twice a week. So they come out on Wednesday and Friday normally. So yeah, go and check those out if you just can't get enough of me talking about baseball.
Can anyone get enough of you talking about baseball?
Nobody's objected yet, so presumably not.
Yeah, and if you want to talk more, listen to Darius talk more about baseball, then do come and find us at that event in Hyde Park, because I'm sure he'll be happy to talk to you as much or as little as you like. And on that note, remember to keep Tom in your prayers, the poor little lamb. And with that, good night.